Right. It's actually knowing how to pitch the company and knowing how to speak the language to physicists.
And that's basically as a result of just being around them and picking up their conversations and all that type of stuff. I tell you, there is something truly missing there. And I do think that it'd be interesting if that actually plays out to market advantage. So if you imagine you have an in-person outfit that's able to simply be more convincing to candidates because they know they've heard it and got better and they're just, have the onboarding in person compared to a remote outfit, which doesn't have that. I guess one will win on price. The other one might win on quality. And strangely enough, the on-premise folks might
more engagement somehow from the candidate.
Anyway, right, we're live, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 148, bringing it to you every Friday, no fail. Super excited to be speaking with you today because we've got a really interesting topic. I think data-driven recruitment is kind of the trend, the on-trend term for 2022. If the previous years are all about shift to remote and all this, DDR seems to be where we want to be to be going. I don't know anybody that's like a critic of the idea. I'd love to surface this out and actually test it against it. Everyone seems like the consensus is, hey, we need to be doing this. Okay, so this show is about what is data-driven recruitment, why is it important, why should we do it, and how is it actually different from anything else? We've got some really interesting guests for us that have gone on different stages of this journey. Some of them have just started it and they're wrestling with it. Others have got some practice. Other people still have got actually, provide professional services and consultancy on it. So we're going to learn a lot, folks, in terms of how all of this works. Anyway, as usual, just a quick sound check. I want to make sure everyone can hear me okay on Crowdcast. So if you can hear me on Crowdcast, please let me know in the comments. Make sure the audio is fine. We should be live streaming this everywhere. So I'm hoping this is going out on LinkedIn, folks. If it is, let me know because I can't see whether it is. Let me know where you can hear me. Drop me a comment. In fact, let me know where you're tuning in from because I'd be really interested to know where people actually listen to Brain Food Live from. Geographically, where are you registering? And we should be in Twitter and Facebook as well. Twitter these days, by the way, is superior to Facebook in terms of views. Would you believe that? It's incredible how things change. So I think people can hear me okay. I should be fine. Quick word to our sponsors today. Thank you so much to our sponsors. This show can't happen without support from our sponsors. So thank you very much to HiPeople.io. They are a business that is all about talent insights, folks. They started off being kind of like a referencing type of service, but they've really evolved into trying to think, okay, can we actually grab data from the candidates you're about to hire so you can figure out what is their preferred working style? How do they operate in a team? How do they like to be managed? What sorts of things are they good at? What sorts of things do they need support on? And that's this type of stuff, I think, is totally in alignment with the idea of data-driven recruitment. Not just gut feel. It's about trying to figure out, okay, what people want. How can we get a scientific kind of information on these candidates? HiPeople.io, folks. You go ahead and check them out. Okay, so let's get on with the show. Welcome again to the increasingly regular Christine. Christine, thanks for joining me again.
All good. Happy Friday, everyone.
Yeah, happy Friday to you. Great to see you. Thanks for by the way, thanks for just being like so available all the time. It's like super important.
I love it. I love it. But just a side note, I think I mentioned earlier, I do have a candidate, a really great candidate coming in. So I might disappear for a couple of minutes. So if anyone sees me disappear, it's not because I'm not interested in what you're saying. It's just I got to welcome you, roll out the red carpet for a very special candidate.
Can you bring him or her onto the screen? They can join Brain Food Live and we can welcome them to Quantum Motion.
I mean, I don't think he wants to be known that he's interviewing elsewhere, but
confidential stuff. But anyway, there's a bit of behind the scenes recruiting for you. So that's all happening. Okay, great. Well, listen, great to have you on the show, Christine. As we do, as usual, we kind of review the newsletter from last week. So did you read it and what was interesting?
Yeah, always great. I feel like the last few ones I've had to read have been like super, lots of great content. So the first one I would say is definitely the 2022 Work Index, Work Trend Index from Microsoft. Of course, the main topic was around making hybrid work work, where they surveyed over, 31,000 people in 31 countries. I think one thing that really stood out was, employees have a new worth it equation, right? So I'm like, what's a worth it equation? Did you read about that?
It's interesting, what is that? What does it mean? But basically, I tell you what, Microsoft has done an amazing job because they've kind of become a thought leader in this. Yeah. I don't think they did it on purpose, but I believe they started doing the sentiment analysis company-wide pre-COVID. Yeah. And they just kept hitting the employees with this information. So they've become like, okay, tracking some really interesting stuff. Tell us what employee worth it means. Like, what is that? How do you understand that?
Yeah, so essentially it's like they found that people sort of reshaping the priorities and drawing a line on what's important for them, right? Whether it's health, family, time, purpose. So things like free food, or a ping pong table is no longer what people value the most. So companies must meet employees where they are. So I think some stats was around 53% employees feel more likely to prioritize health and well-being nowadays. 52% of Gen Z and millennials are considering changing employers all the time, apparently. So, that's super interesting, I think, to think about from an internal perspective.
And also, maybe this is the new candidate sentiment, obviously elevation of mental health. Everyone now is very happy or not happy to talk about mental health, but it's certainly out in terms of it being a possible conversation to have. Yeah. And people are trying to ensure that they, have self-care and so on. But I can see that also being a management challenge, right? So, how if someone rolls out, hey, I'm doing some self-care, is that an instant antidote to any management issue you might have? So we've got to think about this also. Yeah. Whatever it is going to be exploited. Any system you create will always be exploited. So it's going to be very interesting to see. I would not like to be a manager in today's world, I've got to be honest. No. I think it's super, super difficult.
Agreed. And actually, because I subscribe to a Harvard Business Review, so every day I get the five top five articles. And I swear this week has all been a similar topics. Five rules of leading a hybrid team, is it the great resignation or the great rethink? It's all similar topics. So yeah, it's really interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you should look at that report. I've just shared it in chat stream. Please do take a look. What else is interesting, Christine?
Of course, Andrew Stetsenko's Art of Relocating Tech Talent. I see lots of shares as well on LinkedIn. It's also taking the time out to share his knowledge in this very difficult time. So definitely props to him. But I suppose from my perspective, because my last few hires were from the US, Italy, Australia. So I'm going through the process myself. Quite painful, actually, the process here to hire people, getting a visa is really, really long-winded here in the UK. So yeah, it was just really great, actionable recommendations for collaboration tools, payroll services, visa services, housing search. So I'm actually clicked through some of the links and I'm going to try it out myself.
Yeah, totally. I mean, so for folks who don't know, Andrew is actually a CEO of a company called Relocate.me, which basically helps typically software engineers, data scientists relocate to a new country. You might imagine that in the era of remote, that relocation is no longer an option or no longer something that's important. But in fact, it massively is. And it seems that the way in which you want to do it is kind of use the idea of remote to even soft onboard people before an idea of an eventual relocate. And don't underestimate sort of how attractive certain places might be to other people. I mean, we obviously are very aware of the current situation in Ukraine. Andrew, of course, is Ukrainian and he's currently running an amazing sort of fund which is helping to provide humanitarian relief for his country men and women, and the fund is still open, folks. So what you want to do, I'm going to just share a link to it here. To cut a long story short, what he's doing is suspending his work as a CEO of his business, and he's basically driving a van, delivering food and clothing to people who have been displaced. So go ahead and support the fund. Brain Food has done so. And I encourage you to do that as well. Follow Andrew Stesenko also on LinkedIn. What else was interesting, Christine?
Yeah, last but not least, save the best for last as well. I loved reading the How to Make Reading More Readable blog. I forgot the title. But, you know, I really struggle with writing as well because I was brought up speaking Cantonese and English. So my English is not, I think in English, but
it's fluid.
Like perfect. Yeah. You like to think, but I always second guess when it comes to writing, job specs, right? So it's really interesting to see it side by side. It's really particularly interesting you think about accessibility. You know, why do we add all this unnecessary complex words or, well, numbers was an interesting one because you compare the plain language with the initial article that they're comparing with, they take out numbers and number terms, like key details. So instead of premature about 17 weeks, it's born early. So it kind of makes you think, like, why are we giving so much information if people don't really actually read it? And actually, it applies a lot to our day-to-day writing job specs, people on the go, people are reading it on mobile. Do they have time to absorb all this information?
Do you know what? I've totally changed the way in which I write, having read some of this stuff. And in email in particular, I've totally changed how I do email. So I've started using like heavy formatting. So I use the bullet points all the time.
Yeah.
And I'll tell people, I'm not going to write a paragraph. Here's bullet points, what I think we should do. And then I'll say, hey, I need you to action this. I'll background highlight that into green and say, you need to do this. Or no, it's not an insistence. It's like, if you say no, it's great, but here's an action point I need. Rather than bury it in like a massive load of text that forces people to read, no one's got time for that.
Yeah.
So you need to change. I think the internet and how fast information is moving definitely has changed the way we are reading text, and you need to be sensitive to that. And if that means changing your style of writing, then that's what you need to go ahead and do. Great article, a great website, but I've just shared it in the chat stream.
Very there, cool
so
website.
Make sure you check it out. Okay, let's talk about this topic. Data-driven recruitment. What does this mean to you, Christine? Are you like, sort of when you hear this, do your eyes roll to the back of your head and think, oh my goodness, another thing I've got to try and figure out. Oh, it's the same crap. Like, how do you feel about this? What do you understand by it?
So important. I think, obviously in my previous companies, I had the luxury of having a bigger team. You had, HR business partners, et cetera, looking at all the analytics. So being a lone person in the current company has been a bit of a challenge. But I think it's really important. So the first thing I did here was to get a better understanding, even of things like how many candidates did we offer last year? How many rejected our offers? Just getting an understanding where the blockers are so we can really accurately focus our time on the teams that actually need my help versus the ones actually, they're doing fine. So understanding the challenges and the blockers using data is super crucial, I think, in our day to day.
Yeah, so first thing is just basically to understand the situation as is, because that's not apparent. That's often not apparent, particularly if the signals you're getting are verbal. People just are telling you, hey, this is a problem. It's like, okay,
everyone's
going to
say recruiting is a problem as well. That's the thing, right? Like, recruiting is a blocker, not enough CVs. That's always going to be a thing.
Right. I mean, it's also the case, like, this is why you got the job, right? I mean, part of the reason why hiring you landed to a new job, this is not referring specific to you, Christine, but let's say you've entered into a new company. The reason why that's happened, presumably, is they want to upgrade their recruiting in some way, or, there's a capacity issue and they've brought somebody on board. So clearly things can improve. And what will happen straight away is that people just hit you with demands, and then you're like suddenly in the middle. You could kind of find yourself in the middle of trying to just firefight straight away and then not have sort of any bad. But if you get involved in that, you're going to never get out of those weeds, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just going to keep piling on
top
of you.
Exactly. But I'm keen to learning from the panelists today, I suppose. You always run into the risk of what sort of data is actually important for our roles. Because I've worked with companies before where maybe they overdo with the data, right? You've got the vanity metrics versus, what is actually important. So I'm really keen to hear from our kind of expert panelists today to see what they think.
Yeah, let's bring our panelists on board. Yeah. And our panelists, by the way, I don't want to set them up as experts per se. I just see them as people that have just kind of interfaced with this problem in different different stages. So no one's going to come in here and necessarily provide solutions. But it's like just sharing experience, how this works. If you, by the way, have some thoughts on this topic, what is data-driven recruiting? Do you think you've got it nailed? Like, what are the things have you learned when you've tried to move from like a non-DDR situation to where you are DDR? Like, what does that mean? What is that journey? Okay, so let's bring on Chris Brady. I'm going to bring on Mary Kay as well. And I tell you what, why don't we bring on Andrew as well? No, there we go. Oh, who's this? We've got Chris. Chris, how are you?
I am well. How are you both?
Great to see you. Welcome to the show, Chris. There we have Mary Kay and Andrew as well, simultaneously appearing on screen. Not a microsecond between them. Okay, let's do some introductions here. Chris, who are you, or what is it you do?
Yeah, so I'm a talent acquisition leader in North America. I've been in the recruiting space, started out in the agency space for a couple years, worked at one, led one. And then I had my own agency for 14 years. The last 10, I've been in corporate. So really just knocking down barriers and trying to fix crap. That's like my daily job.
Great stuff. It sounds like this is where we need some DDR, Chris. So great to have you on the show. Mary Kay, good to see you again. Thanks for coming back. Can you introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Sure. Hi, Mary Kay Baldino. I'm in the Chicagoland area. I lead talent acquisition for R1 RCM. We're in the healthcare software space, and we are rebuilding and kind of taking the new approach in a very data-driven way to talent acquisition here.
Fantastic. Great to learn from you in this show. And we have Andrew as well. Andrew Godomsky, great to see you. Who are you? What it is you do, sir?
Hi, I'm Andrew Godomsky, and I'm the Managing Director of Aspen Analytics. We're a human capital consultancy working with Fortune 1000 and helping them set up data-driven recruitment, retention, and training for their organizations. But my day job, most of the time, is helping the U.S. federal government as an operations research analyst. And so my job is to analyze the workforce of the U.S. government. And that's probably all I'll say about that. But helping us make sure that our nation is well protected from domestic and international threat.
Well, that's very exciting, Andrew, and also very much steeped into this topic as well. So great to have you on the show with your perspective. Chris, go to you first, because I think you and I first interacted on this topic on some conversation on LinkedIn or something, didn't we? And you had some things to say about, you know, you wrestling with this situation. How do we move to a point? You know, is everyone's on this journey at different moments? And you know, what can you tell us a little bit about the context of where you're currently at with your business and moving towards a more data-driven approach?
Yeah, so I think a lot of organizations are trying to move to simplicity. And the big challenge that I see with that is, does the technology support that? Right? Like everything you do should be tracked. Every decision you make should be tracked, because if you don't track it and you're not using analytics or data, you're making emotional decisions. And that goes all the way from the stakeholders you work with, because they don't want you to send them a spreadsheet. They want an insight. Tell me what to do. How do I change people's behavior? And that goes across the whole, I feel like the whole sphere, from attrition to, you know, just looking at your recruiters and analyzing, because a lot of people are just stuck in what they've done in the past and that has worked, but technology is changing so fast. I mean, the algorithms, at least even on LinkedIn, blow your mind. What works and goes to the top of the feed 2 weeks ago might not now. So, and my biggest thing I think that I've done to change things is just hire people that are smarter than me and have them actually look at some of the things. And so I, like, right now I'm focused on building a talent hub where I've got recruitment marketing, I've got analytics, and we're really focused on moving the needle, but then tracking it, because, you know, you can hire the best recruiters in the world, but if you can't track anything and show results, no one cares.
Tell me about this tracking, Chris, because is it something that was new to your employer, that this is or new to the department, if you like, before you started this initiative? Did you inherit any kind of like culture about, you know, tracking these behaviors you're talking about, or did you have to implement them in where there wasn't that before?
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing is when you're working for large global organizations, they always want the one size fits all approach. And I find a big challenge with that because, you know, depending on if you're using backend tech stack, ATS, getting that your team educated and up to date might be a little different in each region. And so you're working with that piece of it where you're trying to just get the recruiting muscles flexing, but then how do you track it? Like for instance, right now, we're looking at some challenges within Romania, as well as India, and then also Tel Aviv. And so the journey that we're on is we're trying to increase the output, but we're also looking at the tracking. And you can actually look at the data and go, okay, where's our problem? Where's our gaps? And I think the companies that are farther down the road are time stamping everything. There's KPIs across every metric. And, you know, the one thing I'm trying to do is not create an environment of robots. So there's got to be a balance there too, because where's your gap? Is it scheduling? Is it how long it takes you to make an offer? Is it hiring managers are not giving you a response? But if you have data on all those things, you're just making assumptions.
You know what? I think there's a number of important points there. I love the idea, or the challenge of a distributed team, particularly in different regions. Maybe it's difficult to execute cultural change across those different regions because it's simply going to stick differently. The local behaviors are going to be different. How do you kind of maintain consistency? Because big part of data is comparability, right? You need to basically have the same understanding as to what these numbers mean. Otherwise, it's not going to be comparable and you don't know when or where there's a problem. Mary Kay, go to you with this. Tell us a little bit about sort of how you're doing things here. You're leading a team over there. I think you've been in place for a year or so. Isn't that right, Mary Kay?
Not quite yet, but yeah.
Nudging away. So that's actually not a bad, like, sort of pseudo anniversary to talk about. So can you tell us what has happened in that intervening period that you can point to and say, you know what, we've kind of pushed the marble forward a little bit here in this area, and this is an area where we've got a little bit more to do as far as data-driven recruiting is concerned?
Sure. So you have to start with the data you have, first of all. There's no such thing as perfect data in recruiting. I just don't think that's possible. Recruiting is one of the most complex processes in any business, and it is incredibly important to start with the data you have and understand it before you can move the needle and figure out where to go next. So starting with the data that we have, one of the things we've stopped doing is we've stopped measuring for the average of anything. I don't believe in measuring for the average of any metric. It's not meaningful. Understanding like how rich your data set is part of that is understanding how variable it is. Processes can be highly variable. If you don't understand the level of variability because you're only measuring for the average, you're not going to be able to dig in and understand why. Why is it variable?
Let me interrupt you here, Mary Kay. Isn't that like a heresy? Like whenever I talk about like data-driven, people would give me a number. They say, yeah, we're a 3.1 conversion or whatever it is. Are you saying that's incorrect?
I'm saying that you have to start with where your data is. And so if you've got a complex process with a high rate of variability, that's still data. It's still important to understand what the rate of variability is. Why is it variable? It's most variable in what areas? Like if you're not collecting interview feedback, for example, in your applicant tracking system, you don't have a way to measure interview feedback. You have to prioritize then, you know, what would it take? What kind of behavior change would it take in order to collect that interview feedback in a more disciplined way? So understand your data where you're at in order to set up a roadmap for where you need to go. And it's incredibly important to have those conversations and around those trade-offs with your business leaders. So much of the data in recruiting doesn't actually come from recruiters. It comes from your business leaders. And if they don't have input into what you're trying to measure, if you're not really making them your audience ultimately, then it doesn't really matter what you're measuring. You're not going to really change a significant portion of the behavior.
Did you know what was missing when you arrived sort of in the first week or two within the business, Mary Kay? Was it evident, like, what was the missing?
Oh, yeah, it was very, it was really, really obvious, really fast. I mean, there were some pretty basic service level agreements with the business, and we were measuring against the average of everything, but no one could actually tell me, you know, well, what's the kind of velocity of recruiting here? How big is the gap between the vacancies and, you know, how quickly we're capable of filling them? There were really fundamental questions about recruiting performance that we couldn't answer because we were so focused on measuring the average.
Right, right. And Andrew, I'm going to bring you in here in a second because I think you've got some great insight on this particular point. But just to volunteer, my understanding of this problem with averages is that it decontextualizes that situation. So in other words, we say, oh, time to hire, typical one, time to hire for a role. But we don't often account for sort of how difficult the job is, for instance. It may well be one job is actually super easy to fill. Another job is like totally impossible. They've never hired for it in this company. And you've lumped them both together as two averages. You've averaged that and then said, that's our time to hire. Makes no sense. It's just a random number, right? So I totally get what you're saying. Andrew, let's go to you on this. You consult to different companies and different organizations. Where do you see the pain points? Like, what's the most common, like, reason why they engage your firm, Andrew? Like, the glaring common weakness that you see in organizations with regards to this?
I think part of it is just not having a common language so people can make decisions. And so you have a global organization, you've got, or a large domestic organization, you've got hundreds of leaders, all with their own biases about what good looks like, but no one has stated what good is. And so what ends up happening is they come to us and say, you know, they've checked their ego and they say, we really want to figure this out and create a lexicon so we can make better decisions. And so, to Mary Kay's point, I think, you know, when you think about average, there's a lot of people who believe that that's the thing to measure. And then there's a number of people who believe that's complete waste of time. What you need to figure out is, what does your organization want to do? And first, you start by saying, we're going to measure this, but we're going to put context around it. So you can go ahead and measure an average of whatever you want, but that shouldn't be the only calculation you use to talk about that measure. If I'm going to talk about time to hire, or candidate time to hire, how long does it take for the candidate, as far as they're concerned, to go through your process? They could have applied 10 days after you posted. They could have applied a week before you offer them the job. So you're going to look at candidate time to hire is from when they started until when they said yes. You can talk about average all day long, but if you don't talk about minimum and maximum for, say, the engineering organization, you don't have any context. What I'll tell you is that an organization that has a minimum, that has a median, in an average and a mode that are really close together is a wildly consistent organization. You can take to the bank. If your median and your average are both 45 days candidate time to hire, you can tell almost any one of those managers, this job is going to be filled in 2 months. Because you got all kinds of data. And then it's like, so
you're confident in saying this, Andrew, because you've got the, I guess, you've got your own aggregate because you're consulting with these different businesses, and you can actually compare like the metrics business to business, where obviously if you're an internal person, you don't necessarily have access to that information. The information you've got is purely within the bounds of your own company. And you're saying there's actually some common themes that would determine the health of a recruiting function in a particular organization.
Yeah, I mean, you have to get to the data, right? I mean, and so one of the things that you had said in your email to prior was, where does some of this data live? And so if you don't have good candidate data, understanding when someone applied and when you evaluated them and what steps through the assessment did they go through and where did they come from and, you know, how did you make them feel through the process? If you don't have those that type of data, what you then only have is probably I open job on day one and I close job on day whatever. And believe it or not, requisition data is the slowest moving data with the least amount of variation on a daily basis. The difference between an open job and a closed job is one column that says status. It says open, and then it says closed. Everything else stays the same.
That's really interesting, Andrew. I kind of feel like I'm swimming into deep water for myself here. So this is exactly the degree of discomfort that I most enjoy. So thank you very much for this. But it's very interesting to understand, like, hey, requisition data is in fact the information that a recruiter controls. Therefore, it is the most obvious thing that they would use when they're providing a business case or they're trying to provide their own measurements of success. But you're saying actually that's not actually the best measure, because the people you need to care about is what at the candidate side. You need to collect the information out over there, out beyond the business.
Yeah, I think so. I'm a big fan of the concept of you collect facts, you collect feelings. And so, you know, you do both of those things so you can understand what's happening and when it's happening. Once you've done that and you've collected enough data, you can start getting some insight on why you'd make change and how you're going to make change.
How would you advise a recruiter to move from the collection phase to the insight side of it? Because isn't that something where you need some like data analytic expertise? I mean, the ideal case is, yeah, you would, but there's a lot of recruiters out there that don't have that function. I mean, Chris, you're building that in your team right now, but presumably prior to this action, you just had some recruiters who were busy doing recruiting. So how do you go to a point where you have the analytical horsepower in your business? Is it even feasible to say to do that if you have a more traditional recruiting setup?
So I'm assuming this is at me. So a couple things. Who are you hiring as recruiters, right? Like, you have to understand the environment and who will be successful in that environment. In the environment that I'm in, I am hiring data or, you know, driven, organized people that have grit, but that can keep themselves organized. For instance, if you don't have all of the tech stack set up, you know, because all the vendors will tell you, oh yeah, just plug this in and everything will be great. Here's your visualization and now you know what to do. But it doesn't always implement that way. But I think from that standpoint, even if it's spreadsheets, how are they improving themselves? And are they doing the same things over and over again? You know, you can talk about LinkedIn in mails, in malls for the rest of your life and all those back and forth noise. But I think at the end of the day, if you hire the right people, they will figure it out on their end and say, hey, you know what? This is working. Are we A/B testing? You know, the people that I'm sending messages to, who's responding? Am I sending them to a microsite because my career site's not where I want it to be? What am I doing in starting to think at another level? And that again goes back to my original point of hiring people that are smarter than you. I really like the point that Mary said about the environment you're in, like starting there, where are you at? Because that's everything. Like, because what works at Microsoft might not work at another organization. And at a high level, C-level, this is what they're coming to you and asking you. How do we speed up recruiting? Right? Like, it's just a very broad question, and you've got to try to solve going back. And the other piece of this is the plan. The leaders want to know, where am I at from a plan standpoint? They literally don't care about time to fill. They don't care about any of those metrics. They want to know, if I can hire these 100 people and get their butts in a seat, am I going to meet my numbers to make my profitability? Like, that's super high level. Everything else to them is noise. So that's where tracking and all that, having all that information is super helpful. Sorry, that was a longer probably and went down more tunnels than we were thinking, but that's kind of what I see.
No, I think that's actually a really educational monologue there, Chris. So don't apologize at all. And I totally get the point. Like, sometimes the quickest way to do it might be to hire more data literate people into the TA team. I mean, let's just touch on that a little bit. We've got some comments in the chat there saying, you know, most recruiters don't actually have this skill set. Is that true? And if it is, how do we identify recruiters that do have this skill set? And if that is impossible, how do we bring outside skills in? Any thoughts on this? I'll throw it out to the open.
And hey, Hung, one more question. Sorry to interrupt you. If I would have the last two organizations that I've worked at in the last 10 years, if I would have thought about things a little more, you know, there's tons of books out there of what do you do when you take over a new TA team? I would, number one, push for the analytics person. Take a recruiter headcount and do that, because otherwise you're just fixing some of the problems coming at you, but you're not at the root cause. And I wish I would have done that.
Do we agree that this is a separate role then? The ideal case is that as an operating recruiter, yes, you can improve your data literacy, but they're never going to be expert enough, and maybe even they're using different skills or habitually, you know, different parts of the brain even doing their job, they're never going to be optimized for one or the other. It should be a specialist person in the TA team. Thoughts on this, Mary Kay, your thoughts, Andrew, your thoughts?
I'm a fan of having specialized skills for this work. I do think that it's possible in a small organization. You know, Christine was talking about being in a smaller organization. If you're going to
do it all by herself, I mean, Christine's
right,
sitting there
doing it
like,
all.
Hey,
Google
forget
Sheets.
About it. So there's
Google right, Sheets. Doing, friend.
That's right. It is, and I think that any recruiter can become better at it. It's fundamentally about hiring, for me, curiosity. So, you know, plenty of people on my team who are just intensely curious, and so. They tend to be the most data oriented. They're the ones who are going out and doing research on Google Trends to pick the right job titles for their postings, and who use A/B testing on posting content, and who are looking at, well, what is the throughput for this role? How many people does it take at the top of the funnel to get to a hire? How many of the offers I'm making are being declined? Why are they being declined? They're intensely curious, and they're always looking to self-improve. So they tend to be more naturally data-oriented. Do they have all of the tools and statistics and dashboards that they might want or need, or have the ability even to find it? Maybe not, but they're still going to make improvement, and they're still going to be gathering data because of that curiosity element. So in larger organizations, I do think it needs to be a specialized role, because you can make advancements so much faster, and you can empower those curious recruiters by giving them the dashboards and the data that they need to answer those questions and to dig deeper.
I think that's a really important point, mm-hmm. Mary Kay. Sometimes it's the kind of the accessibility. So there's maybe lots of people with the potential to get there, as you say, that curiosity mindset, but they may just not have stumbled into this experience before. And they've been successful recruiters doing what they're doing, you know, maybe in a more traditional setup. But they don't have, if like, an easy access into this world. And if you're just saying, hey, extract this load of numbers and do something with this, they're thinking, right, I'd love to do that, but maybe I don't have the immediate skill set to do it. I need to learn that skill set. I'm not being compensated for it. I'm actually not getting tracked and measured on that. So they end up not doing it. It's a very interesting case to say, you know, do you need to have this? Andrew, go to you. Would you say that companies that have a dedicated complement on data analytics in the TA team perform better or not? I mean, is it possible to spread the skill set across generalist recruiters, I guess is the question.
So I think that what you want to do, what I tend to see in these larger organizations, I think in smaller organizations, there's a lot more, some of the startups are barely having paper clips and that kind of stuff. So let's all realize we're not going to not everyone's going to have Power BI and Visier and all other kinds of tools. But I think that to use an analogy, you have the people who develop applications and then the people who use applications. Recruiters and sourcers and coordinators and managers and senior executives within talent acquisition are users. They are app users. Then you have application developers or product developers. And these are your analysts and your operation analysts and your economists and all these other folks. So as an example, in data-driven recruitment, you might create a talent intelligence tool. And it maps, you could be using LinkedIn Insights, you could be using whoever, right? But someone has to kind of say, we hire a lot of engineers and we don't hire enough women. We don't have enough women applying. And we've done that analysis. They set up the product that says, when we have software engineering jobs, first recruiter, go over here and look at this tool and interpret what it means. What it means. Oh, look, we should go to Austin, to Texas, look at alumni for these schools because they have a higher graduation rate of women with computer science and engineering degrees. Great. That product was created by an analyst. It's the recruiter who knows to use data and arm themselves with that before they go to market. And I think that that's why we want to have app makers and app users. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say, hey, let's go ahead and get a whole bunch of recruiters and teach them how to do regression analysis. Let's teach them how to use talent intelligence tools that are reliable. Let's teach them how to tell good data stories, right? And why this is important. But my I love this. Hey, let's get a whole bunch of recruiters and they'll tell you what we should put on a dashboard. I'm like, well, how many dashboards have they built? How many, I'm pretty sure they know how to get a candidate on the horn and recruit them and tell them about your brand. But do they know how to make iOS applications? No. Well, then why would you put them in a position to create an application for your own organization?
I think it's a separate job. It is a separate job, yeah. And I think that, you know, that's probably music to the ears of most recruiters, to be honest with you, in the sense that, you know, they've got enough to do, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, folks. I mean, everyone's totally slammed. There's no way they can go and build a new skill set in the middle of trying to hire all these people with an under-resourced team as it is. The last thing they need to be doing is being told to have to interrogate or to create these tools. It's a different type of process that needs to be brought in. Like you said, Chris, maybe it's a case of having to sacrifice a headcount. Or was it Mary Kay? You said this, sacrifice a headcount in the team and say, you know what, this person is going to not be an active contributor. It's actually not a recruiter at all. It's someone who's a data analyst. It's someone who can basically understand and support the other team and basically give every member of the team an extra 20% capacity, even though if they're not individually contributing themselves. Okay, cool. In terms of maturity, everyone's on this journey. Let's say we start at zero, where we have classic recruiting kind of approach where you know, maybe it's pretty much just negotiating with a hiring manager per business partner, you know, how you go about things to the end, you know, whatever the optimum is, where I guess maybe there's a completely automated way of doing things, like completely understanding, you know, the data will trigger certain activities or instructions to how the company decides to recruit. Where do you think most of us are on this journey, and you know, how do we get there? How do we accelerate? We've already said, Chris, you know, hire new people that maybe does this. Okay, you got the people. What else do we need to be doing to kind of move that TA function further forward? Anybody?
I think on the you know, you want to think about the talent that's coming into your organization, right? Like from a branding standpoint, because you can have a very sophisticated sourcing outbound model, but it's such a, you know, it takes a while to set that up and really to be successful at that. So I think, you know, from my standpoint, you know, where we actually hired a recruitment marketing specialist to really help with that piece of it. So you're kind of creating that inbound talent, and then you can start slowly working on the other pieces, because there's so many pieces to this. You know, like kind of like Andrew mentioned, if your recruiters aren't equipped with data, it's super hard to be a talent advisor when you're just kind of going through the daily day, and that's the salesperson versus an actual recruiter. But I do feel like, you know, talking about the basics, what are the basics things? Like, do you have a CRM? Are you tracking applications that come in, but are you actually looking at source data? And then, you know, from the career site piece of those things, because those are super basic, but not a lot of organizations are there yet. And the larger the organization, I feel like the more complicated it is to implement something, which, yeah, you'd think they have all this money and they're huge org, but it's not always that way.
Yeah, well, there's lots of legacy to have to wrestle with, isn't there? I mean, oftentimes the companies that probably are most data-driven, if you like, maybe they're just, they were born earlier, but born later in this world, if you like. The ones that have been around hundreds of years or so, companies of that type, they're obviously lumbering around lots of that kind of cultural and even systems practice that's difficult to get rid of. So they can't really invent from zero. Okay. I realize the time here, folks. We always have a mini break in the middle of this show, by the way, because it is very important for me that this conversation doesn't become some sort of bottleneck, so that the people who are interested in this topic, you know, have to finish when we finish. So here's the opportunity, folks. Go ahead and share your LinkedIn profile link in the chat stream or in the comments, and make sure you connect with everyone who's watching this show, because guess what? Everyone else here is also interested in this topic. And here's a bunch of people you might want to connect with, because you can continue that conversation with them when we have to come off air, as inevitably we do have to do. So take a moment, folks, share your LinkedIn link into the chat stream, and make sure you connect with everybody there. And by the way, for people who are watching this on replay, that chat stream is actually available for you. So you can go back to it and make sure you just go and connect with all of these people that are there. I think it's a smart way to kind of just, maybe it's one way actually to get more data literate, is to hang around more data literate people or data passionate people, so to speak. So opportunity for you all to do that. Okay, let's move on to, you know, one thing that you think companies or even individual recruiters need to do in order to improve their data literacy. I totally get that, you know, some people might have some innate or, you know, intrinsic aptitude to this, but probably some of this is trainable as well, in the sense of, you know, how can we become, you know, less, more confident, if you like, in handling and thinking about it in a data-driven way. What do individuals need to do to increase their facility with this? Your thoughts on this, Andrew, go to you first.
You know, I think a lot of recruiters or sourcers or individual contributors who are out there, I think they may not have a lot of confidence in understanding how to explain data. And a lot of the data that they see are in different types of visualizations. So I think just finding, you know, a webinar for 60 minutes or reading a book on data visualization techniques and understanding the power of, we have metrics that measure time, that measure things over time. We have reports that show us distribution or categorization and how we display that information. And then we have context and we say, here are metrics or other things that we would look at that help us explain both of those, the metric and the report. I mean, I think like your average person really doesn't know, how would I display data? And then how would I explain the data? And I see a lot of recruiters try to pull together dashboards and they're candidly using the wrong types of visuals to explain that question that's being answered.
So this is like simple stuff like chart selection, right? Like what kind of thing are you using? A pie chart? Of course you are. You know, it's like that's
that's a good example. Great example. So there's a place for pie charts.
I love pie charts.
But in recruiting, a stacked bar chart with a over a trend with an x-axis outdoes a pie chart every day of the week, twice on Sunday, and four times on New Year's Day, right? Because it shows that distribution and how it changes over time.
Yeah. That's right. And by the way, I think pie charts are dominant because it's the easiest thing, right? It was the first thing that people had touch with. And it's better than just a bunch of text or better than just a list. So everyone went with pie charts. But yeah, if you speak to anybody who's like in any way technical, I remember doing a startup a long time ago. First thing that my engineering friends told me is no more pie charts. Or maybe I should learn a bit about that. Okay, so being able to select, like again, I don't think that's necessarily taught, but perhaps that's something it is teachable, right? Like you can say, okay, here is the type of information you want to present. This is the type of chart that would be more optimal for this purpose. That is a totally trainable thing.
I'll tell you this. I'll close with this comment. If you can't tell a data story like they do on the news, if you're watching BBC and they're talking about how the markets have changed that day or that month, what's going on with the economy, they always show a trend line, then they show a report, what's happening today, and then they say, is this good, is this bad, what's going to happen next? If you can't explain a data story, something simply to a manager on, here's where you've gone, here's where you've been, here's what's happening now, and here's where I think you're going, and you can't do that in a couple of charts, get there. And then all of a sudden you start feeling enabled and you start having a lot more confidence in being able to explain what's going on. Simple stories, but just like the news. Just make it like the news.
I tell you something, Andrew. You've just introduced an idea. I want to just like maybe sit on a little bit. But a story has motion, right? A story isn't a photograph. It has motion. It's a start, finish. It kind of moves. And one thing that you need to think about when you're presenting data is that you need to kind of show the movement. You need to show the dynamism, to use the language properly, the rate of change over time. And hence your selection of the type of visualization. And you can go to any spreadsheet and it'll tell you what options you have. By the way, pie chart is like the first drop down. No, look at some. They want us to use pies. I don't know why. We love it. Anyway, you need to show a trend line, basically, particularly if you're trying to show improvements or identify areas of impact. A pie chart will only give you a snapshot, suitable in certain circumstances, but not tracking rate of change over time. Okay, Mary Kay, go to you. You've obviously been kind of like building this team, building this culture of being more data-driven. What have you learned in this journey doing it in your company, Mary Kay? Like what kind of things do you think have worked in terms of moving the company a bit further forward this way? What kind of things didn't work so well?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think some of the things that work well are aligning your process with the data that you're trying to extract, right? So they have to support each other. If you don't have your process set up to measure the things you care about, then you can't set up your applicant tracking system or other supports of that process in order to track the things you care about. So
what do you mean by that, Mary Kay? Are you saying that if my ATS say tells me I've got to, you know, recruit in this way, I should adopt my process to the ATS?
No, the other way around. Mm-hmm. The other way around. The process first. Design right. your process. And because technology is just there to support process. It's not there to, you know, it either supports and enforces process or it undermines process. And, you know, that's bad. So I also just would tend to, you know, agree with one of the things that Andrew was saying around the dynamism, how dynamic the data needs to be and how the representation of that recruiting data needs to be something that shows movement. Because really at the end of the day, the questions that business leaders want to know tend to be about things that are either about speed or about change. That's what they end up caring about. And so, recruiting data is incredibly dynamic. So if you're not, if your data visualizations don't help you tell the story of how dynamic recruiting is, then, you know, you're really misrepresenting things. Don't just send data dumps to people, send them stories, send them visual stories.
Yeah, I think so. Ultimately, people are saying in the chat here, like, really good to get this type of absorption of information. I still think this is a minority group, though, in the sense that the vast majority of recruiters probably still have that lack of confidence, or, you know, they simply haven't had to deal with it in a different context. Maybe it's something to do with perhaps scale. Like it does seem to be that the bigger the organization, the more demand there is for this type of intelligence at the senior levels of the company, and the more necessity there is, in the sense that, you know, there's so many moving parts. And also, you know, from a capacity point of view, if you're a solo recruiter in a business, probably that's going to be super difficult to do, or at least more difficult to do than if you had a big team around with you. And I'll be interested to know, actually, like, what is the, similar to how you talk about companies, right? You know, how many companies are there in the world? How many of them are just single owner managed? And then, you know, that is actually really interesting to know. I actually don't know the number of how many recruiting departments are actually single recruiters in there. And I think it probably is a large number, isn't it? It's got to be like a majority. So I wonder how you would advise that person to implement some of the basic stuff. Have you got any thoughts on this as the final idea? One person recruiting department. I'm trying to help Christine, by the way. That's her right now.
No, I'm taking notes.
I think one of the things, Christine, at the end of the day, you're trying to get the best client you can, right? And as you continue in your journey, you're also trying to get them to pay you up front, right? The longer you do it, you're wanting to work on retainers, and the way to do that is using data and knowing the market. Because, like, I work with executive search companies, and it blows my mind how many times they come to a kickoff strategy and they haven't done any research. Like, I'm expecting you, because this is what I'm doing when I'm running the search. I'm trying to drive in one direction, and I want to make sure that we're all agreed upon that. And if we don't know what the makeup of the competitive market is from a company standpoint, but also if we're talking about diversity, do they know that? And they are kind of being that advisor to say, go to this location or that location. I feel like that's, at least then you have the money to do what you want, because you got the retainer and you can deliver on it a lot easier, because you can bring in people if you need to.
Chris, you've just mentioned something which I totally neglected to talk about, which is obviously this imperative to diversify the workforce. But that's obviously been a driver, hasn't it, for data-driven recruiting? Because how do you even do this if you are not collecting this information? And also, you know, the shift to remote, I think, gives us much more scope for it also, because it is a wholesale digitization of a lot of previously analog processes. Suddenly you do have potential access to information or data that you didn't have before. Like, for instance, how long is this person spending an interview? Or, you know, I see this person's schedules like extra 45 minutes on top of the average thing, or this hiring manager tends to interview really short time frame and doesn't hire anybody, like stuff that you previously wouldn't know necessarily, or you might hunch, but you wouldn't actually have a stopwatch and measure, but now you can potentially have that data. So two big drivers we haven't even talked about, but we don't have the time to talk about it. Mary Kay and Andrew, I want to go to you with this final question. One person recruiting team, how do they, like, quick tactical quick wins to get them started on moving to a data-driven approach? What's your advice to that? Go to you, Andrew, first with it.
You know, understand conversion. I think it's an interesting, remember your vowels, A, E, I, O, U, and Y. How many applicants turn into some people you evaluate? How many people you evaluate turn into hiring manager interviews? How many of those interviews turn into offers? How many people are left unwanted? So how many did you reject? How many left? And how many said yes, right? If you can focus in on the A, E, I, O, U, and Y, and just understand and kind of tell that story of the funnel and be reliable with it and show it over time, you're going to be way ahead of anything else. Because
how come,
you can
how come I've never heard
so
of
much.
This?
I love it.
How
so
come
much.
I've never heard of this? A-E-I-O-U. And
Glenn's
y.
talking about it in the chat. I've been saying that for a decade.
Is this Gadomski branded? Like, has he patented this?
Because yeah.
I think he should. Because where is this TED Talk, man? Listen, that's amazing. I love it. I want to explore that in greater depth. I think that's a fantastic. You just got to remember it's mnemonic. That you could literally keep in your mind, and it will help you just do the basics, right? Absolutely amazing. Okay, there is a TED Talk.
I would agree with him that is the most foundational stuff. If you're a single person doing everything for a company, you gotta have that. And then I would add on to that recruiters should always remember that the value that they bring to hiring managers in a large part is talent intelligence and understanding the external marketplace mm-hmm. in a way that hiring managers rarely, if ever, do. And so, don't be afraid to gather the external data and bring it to the table. Even things, simple things like using Google Trends to research what works and what doesn't work around posting titles and keywords for your jobs will blow hiring managers' minds, because it doesn't occur to them that recruiting is really a sales and marketing function in so many ways. So don't always remember you're the external marketplace, voice in your business.
Yeah, and you should have confidence on that. And by the way, folks, a quick shout out to a friend of mine who's kind of set up, I think, a really cool group of recruiters that are very data orientated. This guy called Toby Coolshaw, and he set up a group on Facebook called Talent Intelligence Collective or something. Go ahead and search that and try and join it. I think that this type of if you've enjoyed this type of show, you'll enjoy the conversations that typically take place in those spaces. Some of it can get really in-depth because they're like people analytics folks at serious businesses, but they're super welcoming to anybody, no matter what your level is. I think they're very keen to actually have a very accessible approach. Their entire mission, in fact, is to try and increase the data literacy of the TA function in general, which I think is something we can all support. Okay, that's about it, everybody. Oh, there's actually a question left. Do we have time to answer this? Let me just see how good the question is. No, it's not a good question, but I'll ask it straight away. Chris, did you pop up at the HRTX Recruiting Daily's live event 2 days? I think that was answered yes, wasn't it, Chris? Yes. Anyway, that's about it, folks. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Thanks for watching. Chris Brady, thanks for joining. Great to have you make your debut on Brain Food Live. You have a good weekend, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Mary Kay, wonderful to see you again. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. You have a great weekend.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Hi.
And Andrew, always dropping the truth bombs, man. I appreciate it. Really great having you on the show. Wonderful to get your contribution, of course. And of course, we'll get you back if you're interested and motivated to keep talking with us.
Always, always happy to be here. Thank you both. And thanks for our panelists. Enjoy the weekend.
Take care, Andrew.
Take care.
That was really,
interesting. Great. That A-L-U-Y was definitely a great way to end. I'll remember that.
Everyone's blowing up in the chat stream like they'd never heard of it. I've never heard of it. But by the way, Andrew is like rolling it out. It's like this thing has been around for a long time in his world. So yeah, I love it though. It's like basic conversions. I think that's like where you start. And to be honest with you, recruiters generally in the past, even agency level, had some inkling as to what conversion was, mm-hmm. right? Number of calls out back in the day, yep. number of emails out, all this. So we kind of have a little bit of this. It's not totally alien to what we do. Yeah. Anyway, that's about it, everybody. Have a good weekend. I'll see you next week. Right, that's it. So Christine.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for joining.
No, all good. Sorry I had to duck out.
Don't worry. Was he good? Well, I suppose you
couldn't
tell.
Yeah, he was much taller than I thought he was. You know, you have that classic kind of virtual thing. Yeah, no. Gave him the mandatory coffee, showed him around the office, gave him a book.
Is like the new thing, isn't it? It's almost like the stuff you didn't have to do for 2 years or more, like greeting candidates in office. That's like totally new. And I just wonder, maybe it's one of the good things to do, you know, if you've got a nice office and stuff.
Yeah, I think so. And also just getting a vibe, getting a feel of the office space, showing him a culture. You know, we're super nice and fun people. Why wouldn't you want to work with us kind of thing? Let's see.
You have to perform. Yeah, that's right.
That was great. That was really learned a lot there.
All right. Well, listen, we'll have to catch up soon. You know, I'm away for a month or so, right?
So yeah, you said. So what's happening, Australia?
Yeah, so I'm gone in like sooner than I realized. That's why I'm so busy. Like, I think I'm flying next week. So I've got like loads of crap to do in the interim.
Do you need a quarantine when you're there?
You need to do a PCR and then be clear. And then if you're clear, you're good. If you're not, then to be honest with you, it is super high risk because any traveling of that distance, I think there is a big chance, obviously.
Yeah.
Or at least a chance. And then, you know, you trip through it. But who knows? That's what we have to roll with. Anyway, listen, when I get back, we'll catch up, okay?
Yeah, for sure. Take care. Have a safe trip. See you later. Bye, everyone. Bye.
Okay, that's it, everyone. Have a good weekend. We are back next week. Actually, no, we're back on Wednesday. We are going to be talking data as well. We're going to be talking with a founder's focus with a good friend of mine called Sahil Majos. He is the CEO of MetaView. We're going to have a founder's focus with him. And then on Friday, last Friday, I'm here in the UK. We will be talking about... What will we be talking about? Something interesting, I'm sure it is. Make sure you tune up to it. Oh, it's... Social, it's basically about networking. Has work from home ruined your networking? Is it possible to network remotely? Make sure you tune in for that because it's something we all have to learn. Okay, thanks for watching, everyone.